Amazing, all of you. I know that some of us, it takes more work than others. So turn to the person next to you and tell them, you look beautiful today. I am glad you are here. All right. Very good. Cindy, you're all alone there. Both Cindys look absolutely beautiful today. And the third Cindy, well, where are your daughter? Oh, my goodness, they're with the kids over there. Okay, all right. All three Cindys look absolutely beautiful today. And if this is your first time at Redeeming Grace Fellowship, expect to be told ever so often that you do look beautiful. And we're not ashamed of that. We like saying that, and it's important to us. Had a good week? Yes? Wow, okay. Had a bad week? Okay, you just had a week, it seems, because you're not neither or, but it is good to be here. This morning, I had a chance to lead with a Bible study class, a Sabbath school class with our kids, and boy, if you want to get an exercise and you want to burn 1,300 calories before 11 a.m., we encourage you to teach Sabbath school, our children's Sabbath school classes. It is very healthy exercise emotionally and physically. And today is the first day of the fall that we're having children's church again. So it feels like a new day. It feels like we're getting back in sync. We see some lovebirds that are back after their trip in Europe. Welcome back. We're glad you're here. And it's just good to be here. So I had thought about sharing something with you that I had already prepared, and I had shared somewhere else, and I was going to reuse here. And then there's this thing that God has been steering in my mind, and I actually decided to end up sharing that with you today. So I'm not sure if it's a sermon. We're going to look at five words in Hebrew, so it's going to be kind of like a language class. And then we're going to look at a story that Jesus told about those words. And then we're going to ask some questions and share some stories and try to see how those words interact with our lives today. Sounds good? And I'm not sure how long it's going to take, but we're going to go with it. And it's in my best interest to finish here as early as I can. But before we start, turn to the person next to you and tell them, I love you. Just tell them that. I love you. If it's appropriate, say, I love you, babe. If it's not appropriate, please don't say, I love you, babe. Say, I love you, man. And if that's not appropriate, say, I love you, girl. You can make it work, but figure it out. But just tell them, I love you. Because it's important for them to know that. I love you. Cindy, I love you. I love you, babe. I can tell you I love you, babe. I have every right to do that. Now, that's an interesting thing about love, isn't it? How do we come to love, and how do others come to love us? Patrick, how did you get someone to love you in the way that Robin loves you? How did that work? A lot of work for her. Okay. No work for you, right? You had to just restrain her. Stop loving me, please. All right. It was a lot of work on Robin. All right. Chris, how did you get Jackie to love you? Overtime. Okay. Some of us, it takes time. How do we get people to love us? Eric, I see you cheesing there. So I have to ask you. How do we get people to love us? How do we get those significant others who decide to pledge their lives to us, for better or worse, till death do us apart? How do we get people to do that? Personal connection, okay. Lots of meals, maybe, flowers, sometimes. Patrick driving out in the middle of a storm. I heard about that, Patrick. Yes, going the route that Robin would go before she went to work. He's doing that route to make sure it's safer. We show love, right? Now, parents, how do we get our kids to love us? Linda, how did you get Christopher to love you? Does he love you? We won't ask him. I'll ask you, brother. Just naturally? Yeah? Okay. Kids. Most of them are away, but we do have a few. We have some kids like Adam, right? Kids, yeah. How do we get our parents to love us? Do we have to conquer their love? Do we have to earn it? How do we get mom and dad to love us? By listening? Okay, wow, that's going to be very good. Now, here's the most obvious question of them all. Can you force someone to love you? know? Are you absolutely sure? Who's absolutely sure that you cannot force someone to love you? Just raise your hands. Don't be shy. So, would it make sense then to command someone to love you? Cindy, I command you to love me. Does that make sense? Why not? Then why in Matthew chapter 12, Jesus says, this is the greatest commandment of them all. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There's no other commandment greater than this. If it makes absolutely no sense to command someone to love you, why does God command us to love him? So, you want to wrestle with that for a few minutes? When Jesus is speaking here, he's actually quoting this old Jewish prayer that people prayed for thousands of years, every morning and every evening, and it was known as the Shema. So we're going to start practicing some Hebrew. Are you with me? So for those of you who are very technical, this is going to be your part of the message. We're going to spend about 5 minutes looking at words and getting very technical. For the rest of you that fall asleep, at the end we'll do some stories. So there's a little bit for everyone. But this is the prayer that Jesus is quoting in that very verse, and this seems to be on, okay? And by the way, if you want to know more about this, guys, we're going to get a little bit technical, but not too technical. There's this awesome resource. It's called The Bible Project, and you find a lot of stuff there. There's a series on the Shema that gets each of these words and then a few more that I'm leaving out, and it takes them one by one with short little videos, like 3 to 4 minute videos. It's really good stuff. I'm borrowing some of that content, but you can go there and look more. And this is how that prayer went. It's a prayer that they prayed every single morning and every single evening, even to this day, as a people, as the Jewish people, and it is found in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 and 5. And it says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. This is what Jesus is quoting. And to us, these words are a little bit detached as to the meaning that they had for the people that heard him, because these people that heard this command from God, they had been reciting this prayer every single morning and every single night for their entire lives, for their entire history as a nation, as a people. But what they meant by that might be just a little different than what it means for us. So there's a few key words. This is one of the shortest prayers in the Bible, and yet one of the most powerful one. And there's a few words that pack things that at first sight we just miss. So the first word that is read there, it's hear. And this is already when we start missing a whole lot of stuff. Because the word that is used there, the word that Moses wrote was Shema. Can you say it with me? Shema. One more time. Shema. All right? Shema was a word that was typically used to get people maybe to hear, but more than to hear, to do something more important than hearing. Can a parent tell me what's more important than hearing? Who said listening? A true parent. There we go. Because there's a difference between hearing and listening. The word that is used here, it's actually the word that is best described as listen. In some of your translations, actually say listen. Because it takes before just the sound waves that hit your ears, your eardrum, but it's actually what you do with those words. And many times when there was something really important that they needed to convey, they wouldn't say just Shema, they would say Shema, Shema. They would say it twice in a row to say how important this is. In the Psalms, when the people of Israel were trying to talk to God, and David would write his prayers, he would say, Shema, God, our suffering, our prayer. Listen, Lord, to my heart. Listen to what is going on in our lives. Listen to our pleas. Listen to what we're saying. In Exodus chapter 19, now it says there that God, Shema, the pain of the people of Israel. He Shema their prayers, and he took them out of Israel. He listened to their words. But not only that, in Exodus, then, sorry, that was in Genesis. In Exodus, in the beginning of Exodus, in Exodus 19, now God tells them, if you shema my covenant, if you hear, if you listen to my covenant, you will be my people and I will be your God. It's an action of hearing and listening, paying attention, taking focus, and responding to what it is being said. Now, here's something really interesting for you to wrestle with. In the Old Testament, there is no word for obey. There is no word that says obey. The only word that is used is actually listen. It's not obey my commands, it's listen to the commands. Isn't that beautiful? God, it wasn't so interested in getting them to just follow something, but to actually listen to what he was trying to tell them in this covenant that he was making. And that's, by the way, what the sermon was going to be about covenant. But we'll do that another time. So he says, listen, for I, the Lord, am one. And we could go into the Yahweh, which is extremely powerful. That was the other word that we could unpack, but we're going to leave it for another time. But these Israelites had come from all these gods that demanded things from there, all these gods that needed to be appeased, and all these gods that the only thing that these gods wanted were sacrifices. So they would sacrifice their grain. They would sacrifice their cattle, they would sacrifice their own children in their altars because these gods weren't interested in people hearing them. These gods were only interested in what people could give to them. But this God was different. He said, listen to my voice. And then the next word that is used that we're going to focus on is love. You shall love. What does it mean to love? The word that is used in this prayer is ahava. Can you say it with me? Ahava. Ahava. And it's a very interesting word. Now, many of us are familiar that in the Greek language, there are different words for love. And you have philos, and then you have eros, which is like sexy time love. And then you have agape, which is like another type of love. But in this part of the Bible, in the Old Testament, there were a few words. And this one is the most broadest one, because it starts with affection, but it doesn't end with just affection. For example, it says that the king had ahava for Esther. He had love for Esther, and there was an affection. But it also says that Jacob had ahava for Isaac, and David had ahava for Jonathan. And the king of Tyre had ahava for David. And because the king of Tyre had ahava for David, he then donated all the materials so that his son Solomon could build the temple. And because David had ahava for Jonathan, when his family, Jonathan's family, was wiped out, David took them in and took care of their descendants. So it's an affection that starts in the heart. It's an affection. It's a feeling. It's something that you feel. But then it's translated into action. Because love without action is dead. James said, show me your faith without works in a way. And that could mean very different things. But a love that is not expressed, a love that is not acting as, a love, an affection that doesn't lead to some sort of outward expression and action, it's very hard to feel its effect. And in the same way, actions without love are meaningless. In 1 Corinthians, it says, right, even if I give my body to be burned, the ultimate sacrifice, but I have no love, it's nothing. And it is this union of an affection that comes deep within and an action that follows that affection that is the type of love that God wants from us. It's both an affection, something that comes from within, but that then is expressed out in action, in active action. It's not duty. It's not something that you have to do just because you have to do it, but it comes from that compassionate heart. In Deuteronomy, it says, if you love me, when you have the ahava for me, you will listen, you will follow. What does Micah 6 says? When you have this ahava for me, okay, I want you to just walk justly, to love mercy, and have an outward expression of that love. But then comes the third word, and then we're going to transition out of this technical part. And it says, and I want you to have this ahava, this affection that translates into action for the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your lev. Can you say it with me? Lev. Lev. All right? We're going to do two more and then we're done. Lev. Now, what is the lev? The lev is this organ here in our hearts. Now, the Jewish people didn't have an understanding of anatomy as we do now, but they figured that this part of their heart was, this part of their body was really important. First of all, they figured out that this part of the heart was where the life force came from, where blood was pumped, what they needed to be alive. So there's many parts in the Bible when it talks about the life coming from the heart. And actually, there is one verse that hints to someone having a heart attack. So they recognized that there was something about the heart that gave us life. But it was more than that, because it also says that from the heart came feelings. For example, Hannah felt pain because she couldn't have children in her lev, in her heart. That's where pain is felt. That's where sorrow is felt. But not only that, it also says that heart is where joy is found, because it says, be of good cheer, be of good heart. So heart is somewhere where feelings are found, where life force is found, okay, the physical part, but the emotions, and then what comes from that. Judges, 16:25, it says, to be of good spirit, to be happy, is to be of good heart. But it's also where our choices come and our desires. Jeremiah would come to, in the Psalms, David would say to God, God, you are so wonderful and you fulfill the desires of our hearts. And then Jeremiah would say, well, yeah, that's true, but sometimes the heart is deceitful above all things. And that's why a couple of weeks ago we talked about the heart and how we guard our heart. In Deuteronomy, it talks about the circumcision of the heart. And then in Psalms 51, David is crying out to God after he messed up miserably. He says, create in me a brand new heart. And in Ezekiel 36, I said, I will take their hearts of stone and I will give them a heart of flesh. We studied this 2 weeks ago, Proverbs 4:23. It says, guard above all else your heart, because it's your heart where all things flow from. Our choices, our desires. It's both physical and it's emotional. It is where we experience pain and suffering and also our joy and our happiness. It's also where our choices and our knowledge comes from, your heart. So the prayer is saying, listen to this God who is your friend, and now have a sort of affection with him that leads to action, that comes from your emotions, from your physical body, from your desires, and from everything, the whole of you. And then it says, and you will love him with all your nefesh. Now, you want to say that one. That one is cool. Nefesh. 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 One more time. Like you're Italian. Nefesh. Okay? Or like you're a Bostonian. How would a Bostonian? I don't know. Well, nefesh. What is nefesh? Would somebody like to take a wild guess at what it means? The soul? Actually, it's actually very different than what we use from there. Actually, it was the Greeks that kind of messed us up. But nephesh actually means throat. Your throat. It says that when Joseph was taken into captivity in Egypt, they put a chain and a shackle in his nephesh, in his throat. That the whole people of Israel, again, when they were in the desert, when they were thirsty, it says, and their nephesh, their throat, had dried up. But it also obviously goes beyond that, because it is through the throat that the life comes in, that the nourishment comes in that we need, that the water comes in that we need. And that's where we get the meaning, obviously, of the whole body. So when the Bible also talks about groups of people, there were 43 nepheshes there. It's kind of similar when we say there were 34 souls at church this Sabbath. It's a group of people. But it's not this distinction between an inner part and an outside part of our bodies, because the Bible used it for our whole life. Guess how the Bible describes a murderer in the Old Testament? He's a nephesh killer. a nefesh destroyer. That's another expression used for murder. Guess what somebody who kidnaps somebody is? The Bible uses the word nefesh robber. The two words put together, that's what a kidnapper is. Somebody that steals a nefesh, a living soul from somebody. And then when somebody dies, the Old Testament never says that kind of like the nefesh goes somewhere else and it departs the body. It just says that the nefesh has died. So somehow the nefesh is this union between the physical and what comes in, this air, this water, all these things that makes us alive. So now you see that progression? It's saying now you will listen, open your ears, and now you will have feelings and affections for the Lord your God with all your whatever flows from within, the heart, the lev, and all that comes from there, whether it be emotions, feelings, desires, decisions that you make, knowledge and emotions, the left side of your brain and the right side of your brain. You will love to that, and now you will use your nefesh, also your body and the breath of life that you have within you, that you will use to love the Lord your God. And now comes my favorite word of them all, the last one, and it says, and with all your strength. And the word that is used there is probably one of the worst translations, and this is why we lose so much. It's such a tiny prayer, but it's so powerful. The word that is used there is meod. Say it with me, meod. And I told you it was going to be very technical, and this is the last technical part, but meod doesn't necessarily mean strength. When there was a group of people that were trying to translate this into the Greek, they used the word dunamis, and that's where power came, and that's where strength came from. But it was actually quite far from probably what these people meant to say when they were praying. See, me'od is not a verb in itself, it's an adverb. And let me give you an example. When God created the heaven and the earth, he said at first that everything was good, and then he said it was very good. Guess how you say very good? Meod good. Very good. It's super good. It's an expression that expands things. Something is beyond, above. When Job was wealthy, after he was restored, guess what the Bible says that he was? He was meod wealthy. He was very wealthy. He was wealthy above what he was before. And perhaps if we had to translate this, and that's what the Bible Project decides to use and many others, the best word that we could use for this is muchness. And you will love the Lord your God with all your muchness. With the muchness of the sum of all these things, with what's within the heart, with what comes in the strength for life and the vigor of life. With all this muchness, now you will love the Lord your God. So this is the prayer that Jesus chooses. And he says, you want to know what's most important? The most important commandment of them all is to do this. And then it says, verse 34 of chapter 12 of Mark, and I'm not going to put this on the screen. That one, that's the only passage that you'll be parked on, so you can go there or you can trust me that I'll read it. Mark chapter 12, 34. And when Jesus saw that the Pharisees agreed with him, he said to them, you are not far from the kingdom of God. And no one dared to ask him more questions. But then Jesus goes on, and he asks him about David's son, the one we haven't met yet, David. And he establishes a conversation with him that it's a little bit awkward. And he tries to tell him, if David prays his Lord, but then we say that also his son is Lord, where does that leave God? And he quotes this old psalm, and the Lord said to my Lord, sit on my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet. And it says, David himself calls him Lord. How then is he his son? And it starts asking this question about who God is. And we could unpack it, but I'm going to choose not to unpack it. And then he talks to the scribes, and he begins denouncing them for how they were treating widows in the temple. And he says, beware of the scribes who love to go about in long robes and love greeting, I'm reading verse 38, in the marketplaces and the prominent in the synagogues, and they place their places of honors at banquets, who devour widows' houses and for pretense make long prayers. They will receive greater commendation. And then comes a story that I want us to focus on. Because after he has this conversation with them, after he talks about the greatest commandment, about the nature of God, and I want you to do for homework, what does David's son have to do with the next story that we're going to read? That's your homework. But then he tells them this story. And he says, now Jesus sat at the opposite side of the treasury, and he saw how the people put money into the treasury. Many who were rich put what? Much. Many who were rich put in much. But a certain poor widow came and put in two mites, which are two copper coins, probably quite literally something like two pennies, which make it, a farthing, which is basically nothing. And he called his disciples to him and said, truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury. They all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had, her entire livelihood. And this is how Jesus finishes the conversation about the Shema, because it seems that from there they go to something else. What was Jesus trying to say about this widow, and what was he commending? Open question. What do you think? Okay. So what is God interested in? What did Jesus say? Wow, this is really important. This is what I'm getting from this. Is it about percentages then? God was very impressed that she gave 100% while the Pharisees were giving, what, 10% maybe? Because they did tithe, actually. It says that they were actually did that quite regularly, and Jesus said he wasn't very impressed with that necessarily. So it's a percentage thing. So what God would make God really happy is if we all went and emptied our bank accounts and brought it here. That might make art happy. Is that what would make God happy? Her all? All that she had? Gave it from her heart? Okay, yeah. The intent behind the giving? Okay, anyone else? Okay, duty versus love, yes. I love it. Anyone else? And we could just wrap it all up, and we probably will. But yes, anybody would like to add to what David just said? See, the Pharisees, they gave very, very, very much. They gave a lot. They gave much. But Jesus said, but she gave her very own muchness. She gave whatever muchness she had, and that's what she gave. I don't think Jesus was making a distinction between the percentage of her offering versus the percentage of the offer. Actually, in the beginning it says, this is what I find wrong with the Pharisees. They're giving much, but they're also... their heart is not there. They're abusing other people. Actually, their wealth comes from questionable sources. And they're not loving me. They're doing it all for show. But this poor widow, she took the muchness and she brought her offering to this very same place that was robbing her. This temple, this Pharisees may very well have been the ones that made her poor, because that's what Jesus precedes that. He says the Pharisees, they rob these widows. They take their properties. And then they go and do long prayers about it. But that's not how you love. And it says, but this widow, she loved with her muchness. Maybe there are people that have more than us. Maybe there are people who can give more than we can. Maybe there are people who can say long, beautiful prayers, and like Jonathan's today. And maybe that's not what we have. But says Jesus said, what I appreciate about this widow is not how much she gave, but that she gave from her muchness. I love how Ellen G. White frames this moment. She's one of my favorite authors. I do believe she was, she received inspiration. She was guided as she was writing some of these ideas that came to her mind. And this is the insight that she had, if the remote could help me. And it says, she did what she could. She did what she could. And her act was to be monument to her memory through all of time, and her joy in eternity. Her heart, her muchness, her lev nefesh, all these words that we've been talking about, went with her gift. Its value was estimated not in the worth of the coin, but with the love, the ahava, which she gave it to God, and the interest in his work that prompted her gift. She gave from muchness. She came, listen, and then she frames it with this. And she did in faith. She did having listened, having had this sort of connection, believing, knowing. She had listened to this God. And he says, and that her heavenly Father would not overlook her great need. And it was this unselfish spirit and childlike faith that won the Savior's commendation. It is not that whether we give 100% or 50% or 10%. It is how much muchness we give. So what does this mean to us? And why does it even matter? First of all, I think it's important that we all learn to love with our muchness. Because muchness always opens us up to more muchness. Muchness will always open us up to more muchness. And there's two ways that this happens. First of all, it happens through awareness. When you give from your muchness, you become aware of how much muchness you actually have. There was an interesting research that they did in the late 90s. It was Yale University. I can look it up. It's been a while since I looked up those papers. I didn't have time to do it. But they were interviewing hotel attendants, the people that make the beds and the furniture in the hotels. How do you call them? What's the proper name? Housekeeping. There we go. Yes. A team of housekeepers that had very bad health. They weren't very healthy. And they asked them if they had time for exercise. And many of them said that because of work schedules, because they had to work around the schedule of guests, they never had time for exercise. And this is what the university did. To half of them, they looked at them for a period of, I think it was 90 days. And to half of them, they showed them how everything that they did on their daily routines, picking up towels, folding up beds, walking up and down the stairs, all those things that they did, they told them how that was equivalent to exercise. This is equivalent to 15 minutes of running. This is equivalent to 30 jumping jacks. This is equivalent to all these things. And they just made them aware of the fact that what they were doing was physical activity. And here's what they found at the end of the 90 days. Their blood pressure and all their vitals were 10% better than everybody else who did the same activities not knowing that it was good. Sometimes muchness just opens us up for muchness. This is one of the things why these little devices are so powerful, because maybe you do 10,000 steps every day and you just don't know it. But when you know, when the furniture is arranged in your mind in such a way that you actually are aware of the muchness that there is, somehow that awareness of muchness opens you up to muchness. And sometimes just being able to open up and see that muchness can result in that 10% difference that we need to live happily and healthily. So muchness always opens up through more muchness, whether it be by when we give with muchness, with all of our hearts, in our time, in our service, whatever it is, that makes us aware of how much muchness we have. But it also increases muchness because it's contagious. This last couple of weeks, I had a chance to work with Dr. Elias Girandi. Many of you will meet him tomorrow at the health fair if you haven't met him. I know Sophie has met him and talked a lot to him. He has this passion to help people. And he has mobilized pretty much all the staff at EVMS to come out to this health fair. We have, I think, more than 30 physicians coming in to give free treatment. He took a week off of work just to help us. I get emails from him at 3 in the morning because there's this muchness within him that he feels that he has to help. And because of him, over 700 people tomorrow will receive either free dental care, extractions, teeth, fillings, whatever it is. Not just a cleaning. Free dental care, free doctor visits. Margie's going to be there doing free doctor visits. They're going to get free glasses. Our church is donating at least 100 sets of glasses. And they're going to get eye exams and cornea exams. And it all started with this muchness that Dr. Elias had and this passion that burned within him. And he wanted to do something about it. And then it began to be contagious. And then he got his co-workers to come in. And then he got his church to do it. And now he got all the area churches to do it. And muchness always brings more muchness because it makes us more aware of it, but also because it's contagious. This poor widow gave more monetarily than any of her contemporaries, any of those Pharisees? How many sermons were compelled by this lady? How many people were inspired by this widow's story? And if you add all that up, she gave way more than all the other Pharisees, because muchness always opens up to muchness. But there's more. Muchness is all that is needed, and it's also exactly what is needed. Because if we're honest, maybe we don't have that much. Maybe I don't have the passion that Dr. Yudandi has. I cannot beat Dr. Yudandi. And that's okay. That's okay. Maybe I don't have millions to put into a bank account. Maybe I don't have these long prayers that the Pharisees has, and I cannot stand and preach a sermon. Maybe I don't have this much. But God doesn't ask for much. All that he asks is for your muchness. Because your muchness is exactly what someone else needs. It doesn't matter how little your muchness might be. It's exactly what is needed. Last Sabbath, we were out in the neighborhoods, and we were knocking doors, and most people were very polite. Nobody kicked us out, and we were inviting them to the health fair. I went over to Peninsula in the afternoon, Saturday afternoon, and we knocked door by door. Yes, very old school. And we were just inviting them, and some people say, well, yeah, that sounds great, but I don't need it. And then we knocked Jimmy's door. Jimmy, his hands were greasy to his elbows right here, and there was a half disassembled car in his driveway. I'm a cars guy, so I picked like a nanosecond car conversation just to build some record, and it turns out that he was working on one of his neighbor's car for free. He was just fixing something that was wrong with his neighbor's car. And we started talking, and we invited him to the health fair, and we told him we're going to be offering free dental care. He says, really? And then he opens his mouth wide. There was a lot of yellow and brown in there. I won't describe it. No pictures to show. And then he grabbed his tooth and he starts moving it like this, back and forth. He says, really? You're going to be doing free dental care? Because I could really use some dental care. I said, yes. And it's going to be free? Are you sure it's going to be free? I said, yes, it's going to be absolutely free. You can come. We'll have it check it out. If we need to put our prostheses, we'll do that. If you need an extraction, he said, yeah, I think I'm going to need an extraction, actually. And he was so happy. And then I told him, well, on top of that, we're also going to be doing vision care, glasses. Really? My wife died 6 months ago, and my health insurance came through her, and I don't have health insurance, and I've been too ashamed to go and get the benefit programs, but my prescription for my glasses is like 6 years old, and I'm pretty sure I'm not fixing this car right because I cannot see. Do you mean you're going to give me free glasses? Like, yeah, we're going to be doing the free glasses. He said, really? I said, yes, yes. Just come on early because you're going to need two services, so we're going to need a little more time. And we're also going to have doctors that come in here. I know one of the doctors. Her name is Margie. She's great. She treats a lot of my friends like Linda, and she's awesome. She's going to be doing also like a consultation. And I have a cardiologist. His name is Dr. Bonner. He's going to be a cardiologist, he says, really? Because my blood pressure's been through the roof, and I just don't want to go to the doctor. I really need that. And he said, well, and he couldn't pronounce my name, so he said, well, Paulo, I think I'm going to spend my whole day at the health fair. And I said, right on, come on, spend the whole day at the health fair. And then he starts talking about his wife, who died 6 months ago. And he said, it sounds like I'm going to need the whole tune-up, because since she's been gone, it's been really hard. And then I asked him, would you like me to pray with you? And he couldn't answer. He just broke down and started crying and crying and crying. And I don't want to romanticize the story. We just prayed together. We hugged. And I received 3 phone calls from him yesterday, making sure that it was still on because of the hurricane and that he could be there. And he said he's going to come at 7 a.m. so he can volunteer with the setup before he can get the services that he needs. Because muchness, your muchness, is all that is needed. He was there helping his neighbor's car. That's the muchness that he had. But that was all he needed to love. And now he says, well, I want to help set up. That's the muchness. And now from our muchness, we can give back to him. Because muchness, it's all that is needed, but it's exactly what is needed. And it doesn't take much to give from your muchness, but it might take the whole of you. All of you. Thursday, I was at the Food Lion. And I was on the line, and there was this lady that I could tell she had been there hour after hour, and she was just scanning the things like crazy. And I just get up to her, and I tell her, thank you. Thank you for, I know this day must have been crazy. I know with the hurricane, people go mad. And just thank you for doing your job so well. And she says, you have no idea. And she just had the biggest smile. And I hadn't seen her smile the whole time. She was just like frowning and angry. And then she gave me like candy to take home just because she appreciated that so much. I go to the parking lot and I see this guy rallying up the carts that were left all over. I said, man, thank you so much for doing that work and keeping us safe so our carts don't get scuffed up. He said, well, I was supposed to work grocery today, and I've been out here the whole time doing this. You have no idea how much that means. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And he just smiled and left. Last week, I went to a nursing home. I had to do a visit there. And I saw this nurse is taking care of people in a nursing home. That is never an easy job. You get very few thank yous, a lot of angry people. And I saw these ladies that were taking care of one of the persons that I went to visit so well. And after my visit, I just went up to them, and I said, I just want to thank you for loving her so well like you do. I know you're here like 12 hours a day. I'm sure your back is killing you, but thank you for treating her with that kindness. And then they asked me if I could pray with them, and they got all the nursing staff together, and we gathered together, and we prayed. And next month in October, three people from Virginia Beach are going to do a weekly Bible study there with the nursing staff and with the inmates. Because it doesn't take much to love with your muchness, but it might take the whole of you to love with your muchness. So what does God want us to do? He wants us to listen to Him, to open our affections and our actions to Him, to bring our heart from where everything flows to Him, our emotions, our desires, our actions, our nefesh, our physical body, and everything that makes it alive, to give it to Him and to take all of that, all of our muchness, and to love Him with that muchness. Because when that happens, that muchness begins to grow and increase. It becomes joy in our lives, and it can change the world. So at the beginning, we asked, how do we get people to love us? How do we love and how do we become loved? Well, it's actually very simple. Let's jump to the last one because it's this simple. We love because He first loved us. And God took His muchness and He gave His muchness to us. He gave us life. He gave us breath. He gave us joy. He gave us a heart to feel, a mind to think. He gave us a body to experience things. He gave us people to surround our lives with. He gave us all this muchness. He gave us the breath of life. And then if it wasn't enough, He gave us His only begotten Son. And He says, I'm going to love you with all of my muchness. All my muchness I give to you. And if you accept that muchness, if you listen and you love and you have affections and you interact with this, if you enter my muchness, you will experience joy. So as we go on from this place, there is muchness within you. It could be a lot, it could be a little, but there is muchness within you. And God says, listen, engage with me. Have that ahava with me. Have that affection and action with me. And love me with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your muchness. And this muchness will flow through you, and it will change your life and the life of those around you. So will you love with your muchness?
Stand and continue to worship. Worthy is the Lamb who was slain.
Like storms that come on by have taken away much from us. But you never asked us to love you with much. But you do ask us, you invite us to love you with our muchness. Maybe there's muchness that we can give out today. And maybe there's very little muchness within us. Maybe we're not Dr. Elias Mirandi. Maybe we're not Jimmy. Maybe we're somewhere in between. But as we open up our hearts and we begin to listen to this God that speaks to us in loving words, in affection and action, may this muchness begin to grow with us. May we learn to love with all of our muchness. May we learn to love you. May we be free to love you with all of our muchness and to love our neighbors with that muchness. And may that muchness grow within us, around us. And may this world be filled with your muchness. So as we leave this place today, may we be free to love you and love others with all of our muchness. We pray this in the name of him who loved us first with all of his muchness.